Harvest. I don't know what you think of when you think of harvest. Maybe you do think of the decorations in church and how beautiful church looks. What does harvest mean? When I grew up in Cavanaleck. Where's that? You probably wonder. Way down by Fimal Town. And yeah, just like this weekend, there were those three services the whole weekend. I still remember the Monday night, there was chairs up the aisles. The place was bunged. And there were the buns and the tea afterwards, which you're going to get tomorrow night as well. But sometimes people wonder, you know, with modern life and the way that it is, you know, harvest, Thanksgiving, so few people maybe today have that kind of subsistence farming kind of lifestyle that was so common in the past. What place does harvest really have? What's it all about? And why do we take this time this weekend to remember harvest? Well, I think when we ask questions like that, it's always good to go back to the beginning. The first time that God's people are, that we find thank offerings brought in the Bible are Cain and Abel in Genesis chapter 4. But the detailed instructions of how God's people were to celebrate the harvest festivals is found in Leviticus 23. And the thing was, for God's people in his land, they didn't just do it once a year. They had three harvest weekends or weeks or celebrations. So it's like doing this thing at least three times a year. And those who put all the work into decorating and getting ready for it probably kind of don't really want to think about that, but that's the way God's people did it. Three times a year, they came and they had these Thanksgiving festivals for the harvest time. So each April, end of the Passover, coincided with the start of the barley harvest, and there was that ceremony of the first fruits, verse 9 to 14. And that first sheaf of the barley harvest was presented to God. And then 50 days later, the end of the grain harvest, there was this festival of the weeks, a time of great rejoicing and thanksgiving to God for all his gifts. And that was found in verse 15 to 22. And then there was this festival that was held in the autumn called the ingathering, when all the fruit crops were brought in. It was the most popular and joyful of all the harvest festivals. I want to look just briefly at those three, and then one thing that is common to all of them. And so there's four things I want us to remember as we go away from this passage this evening, as we think about harvest. Look at verse 10 of Leviticus 23. There we read that the instruction is that they're to speak to the children of Israel and say to them, when you come into the land which I give you and reap its harvest, you shall bring a sheaf of the first fruits of the harvest to the priest. When you come into the land, let's just think about that statement for a moment. When you come into the land, the first of the three festivals was set down for when they came into the promised land. Now imagine you're one of the children of Israel who for 40 years you had wandered in the wilderness. You would have searched for water. You lived in a barren, you traveled through a barren place, desert. And from time to time, God would have provided that water in a miraculous way. And the food, well, there was no local store. You couldn't go to Tesco's, other shops aren't available. I don't know what your local ones are here. But you couldn't work the ground even. You couldn't plant the seed. You relied on food from heaven. That's how God's people survived. Each morning they would wake and they would look out of their tents and they would see manna on the ground. And in Exodus 16 and 31 it says that this manna was like white coriander seed. And with taste, the taste of it was like wafers made with honey. My eldest girl, when she was growing up, her favorite sandwiches were honey sandwiches. She would have loved it. But each morning, God's people gathered from the ground enough food for that day. If they tried to gather more than they needed, tried to keep it overnight, It went bad and it was full of worms. You know that old rhyme, Old Mother Hubbard went to the cupboard to fetch a poor dog a bone. When she got there, the cupboard was bare. Well, in a sense, that is how the children of Israel lived in the wilderness. The cupboards were bare. Each day, they relied on God sending manna from heaven if they were going to eat and have food. Each day they rejoiced and each day they gave thanks that there was food for that day. No manna, they went hungry. It was as simple as that. If God didn't provide that day, they went without food. But every day they were thankful because God did provide. Do you know, living like that deepens your faith. It underlines daily your dependence on God. But something was going to change for the children of Israel. Things were going to be radically different when they entered the land. God had promised that this land would be a land that would be overflowing with milk and honey. It'd be a land of plenty. The fruit of the land could be harvested and stored up. It would sustain them right throughout the year. It would be a place where the cupboards would be full. They would no longer live on that knife edge of concern. Would they have food for the day? They wouldn't be wondering where their next meal was coming from. But the thing is this, in a land of plenty, where cupboards are full, they might forget who had brought them to that place and who really provided for their needs. And so there in verse 10, when you come into the land which I will give you and reap its harvest, then you shall bring a sheaf of the first fruits of your harvest to the priest. And you know, many of us today do not depend on the land for our living. But harvest has not lost its meaning. The opposite is true. We need harvest celebrations much more than ever. I remember visiting an old farmer in Keady, actually. I won't tell you who it was, because somebody here might know them. But visiting with this old man, he sat down and the carer had brought in this meal for him to eat, and he sat and he looked at it and he said, "Look, I can remember when I was young and I worked hard all day and I needed lots of food and there was hardly anything to eat. Those were the hard days." He says, "Now I'm not fit to work. I sit about all day and I've got a big plateful." He noticed the difference. And he wasn't grumbling, he was thankful. You know, today we can talk about a cost of living crisis, but we live in a time of plenty. We don't live with empty cupboards, wondering where our next meal is coming from. The thing is this, do we remember and acknowledge the one who brought us here? The one who provides? And on the feast of the first fruits, the first of the harvest was to be brought to God as an offering. Before they would take anything for themselves, first they give to God. For these subsistent farmers, the thing that represented how God provided for their needs was the start of the barley harvest. That was the first harvest of the year. And the first part of the first harvest was God's. They gave it to him. I wonder for us, what is the thing that represents God's provision? Our payslip, our pension, or something else? And as we reap the benefits of money and time and health and strength, what is it that we present to God? Do we give him the first pound in every ten? Do we give him the first of our time each week? The best of our energy in his service? Our first and our best is what should be given to God. Or is it our first and our best that we spend on entertainment and luxury and comforts, and leave it to the end to see what tattered remains we might have left over for God? If our closest friend was to ask, if they were asked by someone, what is it that you give yourself to most energetically, most enthusiastically, most willingly, would they say, to God first? God requires that we put him first in every way. I love that quote. William Booth was once asked what was the secret of his success in serving God. His reply was to stoop down and to draw a circle on the ground. And then he stepped into the circle and he says, God is everything in this circle. The children of Israel, they crossed over the Jordan into the land that they had been promised, that land of plenty. And when it came to the time of the barley harvest, before they took anything for themselves, they gave first to God. Is that something that's a challenge for us? Is it something that we experience and know? That of all the blessings that God pours into our lives, we want to give him first of what we receive. Second festival was the Festival of Weeks, 15 to 22 of Leviticus 23. And it came 50 days after that festival of the first fruits. And the children of Israel, they brought two loaves made from that grain harvest. And once again, they give public thanks to God for that second harvest. But notice in verse 22, there's that timely remember of how harvesting and receiving from God should never make us self-centered and greedy. You read down to verse 22, what do you find? It says, when you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not wholly reap the corners of your field when you reap, nor shall you gather any gleanings from your harvest. You shall leave them for the poor and for the stranger. And you might sit there and say, well, I don't have a field of corn. What does this mean to me? How could I leave the corner of my field, which I don't own? Maybe you do own a field. What is it that we should leave for others? How can we do this? What's this challenge for us? Do you know, it's not our place to kind of excuse inactivity with arguments. I don't give to mission or poor because, you know, there shouldn't be any poor in this world. People just need to help themselves a bit more. And sometimes people say that and they just do nothing. You know, in the Bible you find that God laid down a whole incredible system of land and property distribution to ensure that people did not descend into permanent poverty. There was the whole Jubilee year system where people were restored to their land even if they'd lost it. But people were still poor. And God wanted those who knew and loved him, to take on responsibility to right what was wrong, to help those who were struggling. And today God says, don't just think about yourself. We come and rejoice at harvest time and all the things that God has provided for us, the many blessings that we enjoy. But here we find this challenge to look out for those who are poor and oppressed and downtrodden, and do something to help. We can't help everybody. That shouldn't prevent us from trying to help somebody. Today, as we rejoice in the harvest and in God's goodness, do we give first to God? Do we leave for the poor and give to them? And the third of those festivals was the Festival of Booths. And it came in the autumn, the end of the vine and the summer fruit and the olive harvests. It was a time when the seasons of harvest had gone, and it was a time for ploughing, for making ready for planting for the next year. It was the most joyful of the harvest festivals, and there were 8 days. It began and it ended on a day of rest. And for the 6 days in between, there was those six daily thank offerings to God. There you are, David. See, just organize a whole week. That was some harvest, wouldn't it? You'd be tired at the end of that one, so you would. But you know, during this week, what did they do? They built booths or tents. And they lived in these tents on the top on the roofs of their houses outside for 8 days. That might be okay today, not so good yesterday, and I don't know what the week's going to look like, but imagine if for the next week you turned off the central heating, you disconnected the fuse board, you parked up the car, you put away the phone, you packed away every toy or modern convenience. Usually you used 2 rooms of your house at most. How would it go? Living for a week without TV, Wi-Fi, computers, electricity, cars, phones, you know, could we do it? But I'll tell you something, at the end of it, you'd be thankful to get all those things back, wouldn't you? And God's people for a week, they lived in booths so they would remember that God had brought them from dwelling in tents for 40 years in a wilderness into a land of plenty. And they gave thanks and they prayed. Because one of the things that accompanied this festival was a prayer for the future. It was a time to begin to plow and plant and to look ahead and to pray for the next harvest. Not taking it for granted, but praying that God would provide again. Here's a question. That's a question for me as well. I wonder, do my prayers for the future outnumber my grumbles and complaints about the past? Where does that balance sit? Does God at this harvest time feel the weight of our prayers for the year ahead? Or does he have to wait till next year and we just grumble and complain as usual? When it comes to harvest, do we give first to God? Do we leave for the poor? Are we praying for the future? You know, we've skipped through an awful lot in this chapter and in terms of these harvest festivals. But I just want to finish by saying there's one thing that was needed every time a thank offering was brought. When the first sheaf of the corn was weighed before God, something more was needed. When those 2 loaves of bread were brought, they couldn't be brought by themselves. When they celebrated the end of the summer harvest,